Hello, I'm Jane Seymour, encouraging you to keep an open heart, even if you have a busted halo. And keep listening to Father Dave right here on the Catholic Channel.
Dr. Quinn, medicine woman, knows what she's talking about. No rapture for her tomorrow. While conducting an ancient oil lamp research in museum depots in Turkey in May of 2002, Philip Dayvalt of Raleigh, North Carolina, discovered a mosaic which depicts the face of Christ and is remarkably derived from the Shroud of Turin, the traditional burial cloth of Christ. In his new book, Face of the God-Man, A Quest for Ancient Oil Lamps Leads to the Prototype of Sacred Art, investigative researcher Philip Dayvalt tells a story about looking into history and seeing on the other side. Welcome to the Busted Halo Show, Philip Dayvalt.
Hey, thank you, Father Dave. Glad to be here.
How are you? Now, where were you in 2002?
I was in Şanlıurfa, Turkey.
Oh, Turkey. And just because you like, you know, going to Turkey? Or what was your goal of being there?
Father Dave, I have followed and researched the Shroud of Turin, the burial cloth, as you said, the traditional burial cloth of Jesus Christ, since 1973. And in 2000, I acquired some oil lamps that had an image very similar to that of the image on the shroud.
Oh, so they're on the oil lamps?
That's correct.
Like engraved or something?
That's correct.
Okay, I see.
And so I pursued these, and in doing so, found out they allegedly came from the northern Mesopotamian area, which would equate to southern Turkey, southeastern Turkey.
Thank you for the geographically challenged in us explaining that. That's very helpful.
And I made arrangements fortuitously over the internet with someone I never met, but over a year and a half developed a strong friendship, and she ended up being my guide and translator.
Wow!
And so I went to Turkey, was there for 3 weeks. I obtained permission from the official state government there to visit certain depots in the museums.
Now, what are depots?
Depots are a storeroom.
Oh, okay. It's so like, you're like, can I go into your storage closet?
Yeah, it's like going to the Smithsonian and going to the warehouse.
Okay. Okay, so far this sounds like a Dan Brown book, so we're going good so far. Because he's going to find something there with a code on it, hidden under there.
Well, let me say this also. You mentioned earlier, and I appreciate it very much, a little prematurely. The book is not out yet. This is strictly an article that I put out.
I see.
The book hopefully will be published within, 6 months.
All righty.
Anyway, this is the lead-in to it.
It's the lead-in.
And so anyway, I was fortunate to be there looking for oil lamps, and where I was in a dark room. I used a flashlight. It only had one light bulb, the room did, and I used my flashlight, and lo and behold, it shone across something that caught my attention. Again, I have followed the shroud since 73. I know what the image looks like, and here was a small mosaic that had the same image.
Oh, my goodness, wow.
And hidden in the innermost sanctum of the depots. Now, if I may digress here for 1 second.
You may.
The legend, Father Dave, there's a legend of King Abgar. I call it the collective accounts of numerous various legends. That shows that the shroud or the cloth of Edessa, which we feel is the shroud, was actually in Şanlıurfa for over 900 years.
Wow. Now, tell us why they call it the cloth of Edessa.
It's cloth of Edessa.
Edessa, sorry.
No, it's okay. Edessa is now Şanlıurfa, the modern town of Urfa or Şanlıurfa eastern Turkey.
In Turkey, okay.
But again, the ancient name for it was Edessa.
Ah, I see.
And so the
shroud ended up there at some point?
It was there pretty much right after the ascension.
Oh, I see.
It was taken there. Legendary accounts say it was taken there, indicate roughly shortly after the ascension.
Oh, I see.
And there it remained. St. Thaddeus allegedly took it to King Abgar. King Abgar in Edessa had requested Jesus pay him a visit. All of this is traditional theory that hasn't been proven, obviously, but
yeah.
This is...
what we call extra-biblical accounts.
That's
things
right.
That, things
exactly.
They're not in Scripture, but they are somewhat reliable texts from that time.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he had requested Jesus pay him a visit. Jesus wrote back, allegedly, via one of the couriers that, he had things to do and complete in Jerusalem, and after his time there, he would send, after completing his father's work, he would have a disciple visit the king. Legend has it that St. Thaddeus went there carrying this cloth that bore the image of Christ.
Right.
Upon seeing this cloth, King Abgar, who suffered from gout and black leprosy, was gradually healed.
Black leprosy.
That's
the really bad kind?
I guess so.
Okay, right.
It sounds bad, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. It's like the Black Death.
That's right. But anyway, he was healed eventually, and his family, they all reverted to Christianity.
Uh-huh.
St. Thaddeus proclaimed the gospel, and the whole community, the whole city of thousands, allegedly became Christians. And therefore, Edessa became one of the first Christian communities outside of St. James Church there, you know, where the brother St. James, the first Christian church in Jerusalem.
Right, okay, wow.
So anyway, long story short, if I may...
Well, too late for that, but that's okay. It's a good story.
That's what took the shroud there. The king.
I'm sure there is a longer version,
there is.
Which is why you got a book brewing.
Yeah. the king was healed gradually. He was so elated that he erected a stand for the cloth and had people pay homage as they entered the city, and allegedly also had a tile by varying accounts placed over the gate. A mosaic tile placed over the gate through which St. Thaddeus had entered.
A tile. So about how large?
The one that I found in the depots.
In the storage room there in the museum.
It's essentially slightly larger than a paper plate.
Oh, wow.
It's fairly small, about 12 inches in diameter. And it looks like concrete on the back, but then I went to pick it up, and it's extremely featherweight.
And on this mosaic tile, there is... pretty much the same image that we see on the Shroud of Turin.
Very much so.
How did they get it? Maybe you're going to tell me. But how did they get it on there?
Okay. fair question. Very good question.
Yeah.
In 1972, a local citizen offered it to the museum for an undisclosed price.
Mm-hmm.
He sold it to the museum, which is a common practice, on a strict, no-questions-asked basis.
Okay.
So they had it. They bought it. They wanted it.
What questions might they ask?
Interestingly, Father Dave, very interesting. The Muslim museum director, his curator, had told me that that was his most prized possession inside of all of the depot. Now, they had numerous tons of ancient relics, pottery, mosaics, lamps. I mean, this was an ancient city. And for that to be the most important possession speaks highly of that mosaic.
Yeah, it sure does.
I was fortunate and honored to have been the first American as well as the first foreigner to visit the inside depots of that museum.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Now, so what sort of cred did you have that they let you in?
I had applied, and it takes about a year and a half to get it. You have to go through the, you know, the embassy and the Ministry of Culture and so forth.
So, in other words, patience.
Very much so. Very much so. Okay. And blessings from him. I was very fortunate.
Sure. So no, I still don't know how they get the mosaic, how they get the image from the Shroud of Turin.
Well, therein lies the $64,000 question.
Oh,
we don't know yet. We don't know how it was transposed.
I see.
But legend has it.
I've hit on it.
Legend has it that it was miraculously produced.
Oh.
Possibly.
Yeah.
We don't know. It could have been the work of a outstanding artist.
Right.
You know, a mosaicist who sat there and observed the shroud.
Right. Or Photoshop.
I doubt it.
They didn't have that back then.
Very interesting, though, King Abgar's second son, a man by the name of King Manu VI, when he assumed office in 57 A.D., he reverted to paganism and began immediate persecution of Christians. Of course, Christian relics were all in dire jeopardy. A quick-thinking bishop quickly gathered the shroud or the cloth of Edessa, allegedly the mosaic, and an oil lamp, and hid them within the walls of Edessa.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't until 468 years later, in 525, during repairs after a flood, were these items found and recovered.
Wow.
But the interesting thing is, and what makes this so interesting here in the work, is that during that time period, other images of Christ began to surface in the catacombs in Rome or in a basilica in Rome and elsewhere in the ancient world, which bore the same image as that of the isotile or the mosaic.
Wow. So either people really valued this image and, like many things, reproduced it somehow, or this is a miraculous image.
How it was produced, no one knows.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
But the point I'm making here is that while it was secreted or hidden away, concealed in the city walls, from approximately 57 A.D. to 525,
wow,
other images were produced that are based on it.
Oh.
That means there had to be a copy of it made sometime between 30 A.D. and 57 A.D.
Okay.
So now that takes everything back to roughly, or the inference back to the first century. And therein lies the profound impact.
Wow.
The shroud, the historical provenance of the shroud can reliably be traced back to roughly the mid-1300s, reliably, historically. It's been under eyeball observation since then. Prior to that, you start getting into circumstantial grounds until the discovery of this mosaic. This is physical evidence, which I contend, via forensic comparative analysis, has taken it back now to the first century. Now, because it's based on the Shroud of Turin, ergo, the shroud is inferred to be the first century cloth, burial cloth of Christ.
Yeah, sure.
So therein, that's the mystery.
Wow. This is fascinating, and you say it'll be a forthcoming book, but people can read your article now, right?
Most definitely. You may read it, you may download it, you may...
It's called Face of the God-Man,
yep.
And as you say, it's a quest for ancient oil lamps that leads to the prototype of sacred art. We're putting the link up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/BustedHaloShow, or you can find it at your website, Karamion502.com. What does that mean?
Yes, Karamion.
I'm sorry.
That's
correct.
Okay. Karamion. And I'll spell that. It's KERAMION502.com.
And what does that mean?
Well, the Karamion is that mosaic,
oh,
allegedly. That's the term given to it through history.
And 502?
The
number of years it was in that missing?
No, the 502 is when it was discovered.
Ooh, okay.
In May of 02.
I was trying to... Oh, I see. May of 02. Oh, I thought it was like, because you said it was for 500 years, it was kind of hidden.
Yeah, for 468 years.
Oh, 468.
Roughly.
That would be Karamion 468. That's a different website.
Right.
Don't go to that one. Go to yours. We'll put it up at the link on our Facebook page, facebook.com/BustedHaloShow.
Right.
And when you've got the book, drop us a line. Let us know.
I appreciate it.
Interesting. Thanks for joining us, Philip DeVault.
Thank you, sir.
It is the free-for-all Friday version of the Busted Halo Show. So give us a call with your questions of faith on any topic at all.
It's a free-for-all.
There was a lot of stuff going on that we didn't have the technology for back in the day. Much more miraculous back then.
Right.
These images of the Shroud of Turin appearing on other things.
Right. Not to say that there aren't miracles that happen now, just because we have.
But I'm saying that today we could scan something. We could take a picture with our iPhone and pass it off as. But then they were not able to do this easily. So more miraculous back then.
Right. But that doesn't mean that there aren't miracles now.
I know, that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm going backwards.
You're going backwards.
No, I'm just saying that it must be miraculous because we could easily do it today. But what happened then? I mean, how could you get the image of the shroud?
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like, you know, these wouldn't be really miracles because we would have the technology to be like, oh, that's really what happened there.
No, I meant if you saw something now and you said, wow, the same image is on a T-shirt as in on a mug. Well, of course, because every website can do that. But back then, they didn't have same image on T-shirt and mug. In fact, I don't think even they had T-shirts.
They weren't called T-shirts.
Oh, okay.
I was actually talking to my roommate about the other day. Like, if people wore their robes in, like, cool, hip fashions back in the day.
Yeah, would they have called
it? Just standard robe.
Did they have, like, those hanging down around your hips kind of toga?
Because we assume that, like, different styles are normal now, but
have
they always been around? Two ropes instead of one rope? I don't know.
And what if it looked like a T-shirt, but no one called it that? Wonder when the first time they called something a T-shirt was.
When they cut off the arms of a long sleeve and it looked like a T?
Oh, but it was hot many millennia ago, Robin. They must have had short sleeve something. No?
Yeah, after they modern... cut the arms off a long sleeve and said, wow, look, it looks like a T. I don't know.
Yeah. Or maybe in their alphabet, it looks like a Zazuzu.
It sounded like that interview could have been like an Indiana Jones kind of
It did movie. Sound very Indiana Jones.
Like Indiana Jones and the Shroud of Turin.
Like the fact that he was the first American let into their storage rooms of these Turkish museums, and the guy called it his prized possession. He's like, well, you're not going to be able to see it.
Yeah.
I remember when Henry Nouwen, the great Catholic spiritual author of the 20th century, he wrote a book on this kind of a similar experience. His opportunity to see what is now publicly displayed, but Rembrandt's Return of the Prodigal Son, which is many people would have seen, would be familiar with reproductions of it. It's primarily red tones, and it's got an old-looking man putting his hands on the shoulders of a young, beat-up, almost homeless-looking guy with his shoe falling off. You may have seen this. It's commonly put into confessionals or near where Catholic reconciliation rooms are. So you may know the image that I'm talking about. And it's by Rembrandt, as in the Rembrandt. And the original is probably about, I'm going to say, 8 feet high by about 5 feet wide, and it was in the museum in St. Petersburg, Russia, the Hermitage Museum, but it was not on public display. And somehow Henry Nouwen, just like our guest, Philip Devault, had persuaded them after many attempts to allow him just to come and sit in front of it. I mean, he didn't want to investigate it or carbon date it or anything like that, like with some of this other stuff. He just really wanted to be in the presence of this original Rembrandt, which tells this wonderful story from Christianity of the return of the prodigal son. And he wrote a whole book on the notes that he took while he was just sitting in front of it. I've had the pleasure of actually seeing it in person because now it is on public display at the Hermitage.
It sounds like in St. Petersburg. Adoration.
Exactly.
Just kind of take it in, just kind of be in the presence of it.
That's very much how his book goes. Oh. And his book is also a reflection on the sacrament of reconciliation itself, but really just focusing on this beautiful work of art.
I'm sorry, maybe I missed the connection. Yeah. What in the art, is it because somebody is kind of beaten up and bedraggled and they're coming back to God? Is that why it connects to reconciliation so much?
It's actually Rembrandt's depicting of the prodigal son story. Of the moment that
he finally comes back.
That he finally comes back. And in his, if you follow the story, he's completely destitute and poor. So he probably looked ragged and beat up and all that. And the father is very old. And with Rembrandt's kind of light and shadows, in the back you see the jealous other brother and his face is kind of scowling. And you see some other people sort of crossing their arms and stuff. But the image in the foreground, which is mostly in red tone, so it's very striking to see it, is the father embracing, hugging his son who's kneeling. He's on his knees before his father as if he's groveling, actually. So it does look like sort of a groveling, beggar or homeless person is trying to hug this older guy. And the father is almost looked like he's lifting him up, And it is striking, beautiful. And when I was in St. Petersburg, we were on a cruise ship excursion. And of course, we go to the Hermitage, which is this museum. I mean, it's got the kind of art like you'd see in the Louvre or any of these places. I mean, it's an amazing collection of art. And we're on the half-day tour of the Hermitage. So she is cruising along. Right. We have these little headsets, because it's so crowded that the tour guide has a little microphone and we're all wearing earbuds and we can listen to him. So she's like,
"Got on your lap as the Monet." That's Monet right there.
And here we go. Right. You gotta keep
going. So she gets to the Rembrandt. We come around a corner and it literally takes up, it's like a floor to ceiling. So it's probably bigger than 8 feet. It's probably more like 10 or 12 feet high. So you come around a corner and there it is. And she says, "Oh, and this is Rembrandt's famous Return of the Prodigal Son. And over here," and I'm just like, "Oh my gosh," because I'd read this book by Henry Nouwen where, as you said, he sat in adoration of this work of art and reflected on the sacrament and on that moment in scripture and Return of the Prodigal Son. And she's moving on. And the problem is, I'm the one with the tour that's supposed to count the heads and make sure everybody's together. And I'm bringing up the rear because I'm sitting there. And it was funny because the little headsets that we had were kind of like little wireless radios. So the farther she got away, it started to break up, like when your cell phone kind of starts to break up. So I'm just sitting there in front of the Rembrandt, Return of the Prodigal Son. I'm like, wow. And all of a sudden you hear it going, "And on your left." And I'm like, oh no, she's getting far away.
Surprised they didn't connect a little electric buzz to go with yours. Keep it up, Dwyer.
But it really was stunning. I wish I did have more time to spend in front of it.
You can't, I guess you're on the half day. You can't like leave the group and come back and
right.
You're kind of on their schedule.
We
right?
had 2 days in St. Petersburg and it's a gorgeous city and we had great weather. You can see how the sort of revolution, the communist revolution came out of the incredible opulence that the royalty lived and you know, the disparity between rich and poor, which of course we have in our day and in our country as well. But I mean, it was just so, I mean, it's like Disneyland almost. It was just like, you couldn't believe these buildings and these castles and everything. So, I mean, the city was great, but I think if somebody gave me a choice, I probably wouldn't have spent the whole 2 days in the museum.
Right.
I mean, it's really, these works of art, these are like, you know, one-of-a-kind, world-renowned works of art.
You could probably see that work of art on a postcard or on the internet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not really the same not effect.
Well, like I said, a lot of Catholic churches will have a print of this in the Reconciliation Room or near it or something like that. So people hearing my voice now probably are familiar with the image that I'm talking about. But seeing it in person is pretty cool. But that's what when Philip Devault was talking about how he had to kind of get in the back storage room and be allowed to see it, that's right. Kind of what Henry Nouwen had to go through. So. All right, coming up on the Busted... What's it called?
Busted Halo Show.
Thank you. Coming up on that show on the Catholic Channel.
Channel,
we've got more for you, so keep it here on
Sirius
XM
129.